plan the Americas tour this summer, I've learned that you got to shoot 5 or 6 under to be in a decent spot each tournament. So it's kind of similar golf of trying to make a lot of birdies. And it's just exciting because, you know, 1 week can change your life. We all know that about golf.
This is The Tournament Code.
We appreciate you taking the time to join us today, Maxwell. We know what you've been up to as far as playing professionally recently. It's a pretty strong class you guys have on the PGA Tour Americas relative to what I can remember in the past. But before we get to talking about that, we kind of like to open up our show with a little bit from our sponsor, which is Puttview Books. They are gracious enough to sponsor us, which means we start everything off with a little bit of an icebreaker, the Puttview Books opening tee shot. And I think this one's pretty low-hanging fruit, but today it's what I got. One, you played at Ohio State. One, who is the best golfer in Ohio State history? Two, what is the hometown of that golfer?
Jack Nicklaus in Upper Arlington, Ohio. Yeah.
There we go.
I knew you'd ask that question as soon as you said low-hanging fruit. He loves Jack. He loves Jack Nicklaus.
I do love Jack Nicklaus.
How do you not?
He is my favorite. So from everything I've read and seen, special character, special guy.
Yeah.
Hard to beat. Now that we've gone into that, tell us a little bit about what it's been like on there. So for the people who haven't been following the PGA Tour Americas, for us, it's been more interesting this year than in past years. This is going to sound bad to say, a lot of years, the PGA Tour Americas one was Latin America and Canadian were separate. So there were two separate tours. So the talent was separated. And so you had to choose which one you were going to go on. Some guys went the Latin America route. I think Harry Higgs might have done that. There might have been a few others that went that way. And then there have also been a few that have gone Canadian. But the getting to the Korn Ferry and the PGA Tour from college essentially has to happen from there, unless you're one of the guys who got those early exemptions on PGA Tour U into Korn Ferry PGA. But the cool part about getting those exemptions is we were able to watch you throughout your college season finish up over the national championships, and then once you finished up there, immediately you're out on Canadian, and that tour has a bunch of those college guys who are playing really well. So now that I've blabbered a little bit, tell us a little bit about what it was like making that transition onto there.
It happened really fast, and it was a pretty drastic change to go from college golf, where you're traveling with 4 to 6 teammates every week, 2 coaches, and you're never bored between rounds. You're always hanging with the guys or messing around, doing a lot of different things. Whereas in professional golf, at least for me to start, I traveled by myself the first couple weeks. So it was an adjustment, kind of a lot of downtime that I wasn't used to having. And yeah, it's definitely different, but I think kind of as I've gone through this summer, I think this will be my 10th event as a pro. I'm going to play this week here in Minnesota. It's definitely something that you get used to eventually. I've been fortunate to have one of my buddies from home travel with me to caddy a couple of weeks, and now my wife is traveling with me full time now. So I've had somebody with me the last 6 weeks or so, which has been a nice change from those first couple of weeks of being by myself. But it's definitely an adjustment. The competition's really good in college, but it's even better out here. I think something I've really noticed is college golf, most tournaments, usually half the guys in the field are truly capable of winning that event. But out here, even on the PGA Tour Americas, if you have a tee time, then you're able to win. So that, I think it's just shows how deep these fields are, and professional golf just continues to get deeper and deeper. And that's why it takes some guys a long time to get to Korn Ferry and PGA Tour.
I know a lot of these courses that you're playing on PGA Tour Americas are probably a lot easier than some of those bigger amateur tournaments you were playing last summer. So consequently, those scores are going to be a lot lower. how have you adjusted to these tournaments where, you know, you have to shoot 20, 25 under compared to like a Northeastern amateur or something like that, where you might have to just shoot 10 or 12.
Yeah. You don't really expect it. Yeah. College golf, amateur golf, you know, if you shoot a couple under every round, you're going to end up in a pretty good spot by the end of the tournament. Whereas out here, it's, yes, the courses are easier, but they're not that much easier. The guys are just really good, and guys make a lot of birdies, guys play aggressive, guys make a lot of putts. And it's been a bit of a wake-up call for me, because I've always been one of those guys who prefers to play a golf tournament where even par is a really good score and conditions are really tough. And we've had none of that so far this summer. It's been make as many birdies as you can. And I've missed two cuts at six under, which, you know, teeing it up this summer, I didn't expect that. And that's happened twice. My best week, I shot 18 under and finished 17th. So it's an adjustment for sure. You got to really learn how to go low, and yeah, it's definitely different.
When you're getting on the road like that week in, week out, especially coming off of college season, as you mentioned, the group you're with is different. Everything is unique for you, but a lot of it's the same in that you're still playing golf, still getting ready. What does it look like on the road for you prepping for a tournament, especially relative to college, where coaches probably were doing a decent bit of the course prep work for you and you weren't having an event weekly?
I think it's definitely different. You know, in college, you usually show up just the day before the event and you get one practice round and you better be ready to go the next day. Up here, you know, usually you get there on Monday and you have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to kind of develop a routine of how much am I going to balance being on the course with range work and practice green and then rest, because I've played 10 out of 11 weeks now. So you have to find days where rest makes sense. And yeah, my routines have changed a little bit. In junior and college golf, I didn't spend a ton of time on the range, spent a lot of time on the course as much as I could, because usually it was only one practice round. But up here you get two or three practice rounds, and I think that you really got to take advantage of those practice rounds. But also, practice rounds are really slow, and you spend 6-7 hours on the course. You got to make sure that you're getting your work in on the range and on the practice green. So it's just really finding a routine that works for you, and I think that's been an adjustment for me. I've started to kind of develop a pattern that seems to work pretty well these last few weeks. And I always use Mondays to my advantage. Usually there's not that many guys out there, so you can move a little faster and try to play as many holes as I can on Monday. And there's usually a pro-am on Wednesday, so I'll spend some time on the course again on Tuesday. And then whether or not I'm in the pro-am determines what my Wednesday looks like. But yeah, just, you know, balancing rest. It's hard sometimes being a pro golfer. You kind of think I need to be at the course all day on these prep days, but sometimes your body needs to rest too, because if you're going to play four rounds, you're going to be really tired by the end of the week. And then most times you have a tournament coming up right after that. So, just balancing how much you're on the course, how much you're grinding on the range, and then how much time you're letting your body recover.
Yeah. I'm not sure what your swing coach situation was in junior and college golf, but I know that a lot of guys making the transition from college golf to pro golf find it difficult to be by themselves on the road for, say, 10 weeks in a row without their swing coach. And you mentioned you're doing a lot of range work. So are you working on things with your swing coach? Are you working on things on your own, or are you just trying to stay sharp?
A little bit of everything. I'm very blessed that my dad is a golf instructor. So he started teaching me the game when I was very young, and he's kind of been my swing coach my whole life. I've worked with a few other guys for small stints, but my dad's been my main resource when it comes to swing coach. So, but yeah, it's, you know, in junior golf, you know, living at home, and he traveled with me to every event, I always had him there. And then college golf, he wasn't there as much. So we had to kind of adjust to me sending him swing videos and kind of doing our lessons, our time together that way. And then up here, it's been an adjustment for sure. I mean, you're playing a lot of golf, you're practicing a lot, and my dad hasn't been able to travel every week, so I've had him up here 3 times. He's been with me at professional events so far, and it's nice. It's so much better to work with my dad in person than it is to send videos over the phone. So I try to get him up here as much as I can. But like you said, the other thing is staying sharp. I mean, you can't really do many things swing change wise throughout a season. You kind of have to do that work in the off season. So a lot of it's staying sharp and making sure I'm hitting it well enough to try to compete each and every week. But yeah, like you said, having a swing coach that's easily accessible, at least at this level, is very important.
Yeah, I was looking at your swing on Instagram, and it looks like you have a very, very low vertical swing plane. So, you know, that club's coming in flat, and you're getting those hands really, really low at impact, maybe even lower than what they are at address. Is that something that you work on or have worked on, or is that something that naturally occurs in your golf swing?
I don't really work on that too much, to be honest. It's kind of been a natural move for me for a long time now. I've had a lot of lag. I usually hit the ball pretty low. I'm not a bomber or a high ball striker. So yeah, I've always had kind of a lower ball flight and a lot of lag. And that's something my dad and I just continue to make sure stays, cause it's helped me be one of the straighter hitters in each level of golf that I've played, and trying to keep it that way.
Yeah. I also noticed that you're basically, your shoulders and your chest is pretty much pointed at the target at impact. Is that something that you've always had, or is that something that you guys have worked on?
That's another thing that's been pretty natural for me. My hips are very fast. So I get kind of very open at the ball. I've always kind of played a cut. And I think that those things kind of line up.
Is it ever tough having your dad be your coach? Kids don't always get along with their dads anyway. Full-grown men don't, sometimes even more so. And that's just normal father-son relationships, not having your dad essentially full-time helping you swing the golf club. What's that been like?
It's been really good for the most part. I mean, we've had definitely our disagreements over time, as every father and son do, especially when a dad's a swing coach. There's a lot of times where I'm stubborn and I want to disagree or don't want to hear what he has to say. But I think the last few months especially, I've really realized that my dad's been there with me at every stage, and he's seen me when I'm at my best in this game, and he's seen my golf swing when it's at its best. So kind of knowing that outside myself, he knows my swing better than anyone, kind of puts me in a place where I kind of have to trust him and understand that his knowledge is, at least for my game specifically, his knowledge is as good as I'm going to get.
You were in college, I think, for 6 years, something, maybe five. Think I'm pretty close on four.
Yeah, just four.
Oh, good. Okay. Then that, it was John Eric who was there for six then.
Eric was there for 30.
Yeah. He's been there. He's been there a while. I remember the other year, like, dang man, I've been out for a while. Here he is still grinding, which more power to him, especially with everything that had happened to him. But so you were in college for 4 years, came out. What was your reason for going to Ohio State? Where was your game at before you got there? And then what kind of happened while you were at Ohio State?
It was a pretty easy decision for me, honestly. Growing up, I wouldn't say that my heart was set on Ohio State at all. I always thought that I wanted to go somewhere south so I could play year round. So I did my due diligence and visited a lot of different places. I did visit a couple schools down south and a few out west. I felt really close to home at Ohio State, and I knew a few guys on the team before I went in, so I felt like I was going to be comfortable. Coach Mosley and our old assistant at the time did a really good job of making it feel like a family, and that was something that was important to me, is having coaches that I can trust, along with, you know, being familiar with some faces once I get there. So it was a pretty easy decision for me. I grew up playing, you know, 9 months of the year, and knowing that 3 months I was going to be practicing indoors And I was okay with that because to that point, it had worked really well. I had a really good junior career, so I wasn't really worried about not being able to do much outside for a few months. And thankfully, at Ohio State, we had a lot of resources, so we were able to travel a lot in December, January, February, and do some work down south. And I really didn't think we were at much of a disadvantage, especially with the indoor facilities we had. So that was an easy decision for me. And then in terms of my game, as I said, I've never been a long guy, but entering college especially, I was one of the shorter hitters in my class, but I definitely was one of the straightest. I've always kind of been known for hitting a lot of fairways, and entering college, I knew that that was going to be successful, but if I wanted to be one of the best players in college, I needed to get a little bit longer. So it was a lot of work with the strength coaches at Ohio State and some speed training with myself, but I picked up a lot of speed, especially from my freshman to junior year. And then junior and senior year kind of maintained where I was at, and I'm pretty comfortable with where I'm at now. There's definitely some room for growth, but I'm kind of in the middle of the pack now in terms of speed and distance out here. So yeah, I think that was kind of the biggest adjustment for me with my game entering college, and something I was able to really improve upon.
What are you cruising at right now?
I'm like a 113 to 115 guy and low 170s ball speed.
Got it. And I know you're a SpeedSticks ambassador. Tell us about how speed training and strength training factored into your improvement and gain in speed.
Yeah, it was huge. I think, you know, in order to habitually swing the club faster, you have to practice it. So I hadn't really done much speed training before I got to school. And then actually John Eric and I did a lot of speed training together for a few years there. We would have speed sessions where we had a goal, you know, if I get to 118 today, then I get an extra dessert tonight at the apartment or whatever. So we made it fun. So yeah, I spent a lot of time my sophomore winter and junior winter working on speed training and trying to get able to swing the club much faster, and then hope that that kind of translated to my on-course speed improving, which it did a lot. So speed training, there's definitely something to it. And then strength training is important too, because speed training could be a risk for injury if your body's not ready for it. So making sure that your core is strong and your legs are strong and your back is ready to swing the club that fast and move that fast is huge for being able to effectively do it.
Yeah, you definitely, being low 170s, you can definitely hit it out there a pretty good ways. But I imagine on the Americas, you're probably consistently behind a lot of guys. How do you approach that mentally?
It's been something I've kind of been used to for most of my career, is never really being the longest guy in my group. But I feel like if I can kind of continue to have the advantage over guys of hitting it straight and hitting a lot of fairways, then the 10 to 20 yards that I'm behind them on some holes is something that I'm okay with giving up, especially on maybe not so much the Americas Tour, but if all goes well and I end up on Korn Ferry and PGA Tour, then a lot of the best players in the world aren't bombers. You know, you've got Scottie Scheffler. He's like a mid to high 170s guy. Morikawa's right around where I'm at. So you can play really well. You can win a lot of golf tournaments in the low 170s, but the key to that is hitting it straight and hitting a lot of fairways. So I'm just trying to continue to do that and not really compare myself to anybody else when it comes to speed.
It's good that that's your approach, because I know it's easy. And for some people, they need the speed, but for a lot of guys, it's easy to be average right about where you are and then be like, well, I'm younger, so I can add another 5 miles per hour of speed and do it. And again, sometimes it works out well for guys, but other times it can be not as advantageous for them, just because golf isn't only about hitting it far. So when you're going out there and playing courses on the Americas and then prepping for Q school on the Korn Ferry, do you select the courses that you're playing in? You said you played 10 of the past 11, so you've been playing a lot of just what's offered, but do you ever select courses or plan tournament schedule around what's going to fit you?
In the past, not a ton. I've kind of, like you said, played what's offered. I mean, junior golf, if you're going to get an invitation to some of the best events you're going to go, regardless of whether the course fits your game or not. Especially, you know, college golf, you have to go, you know, you're on the team, you're going to play. And then this summer, I mean, every opportunity I can get to, you know, play a golf tournament that could change my life, I've got to play no matter what I think of the golf course. And I've actually played well a couple of times at places that wouldn't normally fit my game. So it's been nice to see myself kind of play well on some more open, longer golf courses, where in the past I didn't love those because it didn't fit my play as much. But yeah, I mean, in the future, I think I'll definitely consider it. For Q School this fall, and there were five options for second stage, and I decided on Valencia, California as my choice. It's a harder golf course. Last year, one under made it through. And like I said, I prefer those tougher tests. And from what I know, it's not very long, but it's, you know, tree lined and tight, and you got to hit it where you're looking. And a few of the other courses that are offered for second stage are kind of those long, big ballpark golf courses where guys that hit it 320, 330 are going to have an advantage, even if they're not hitting it as straight as some of the shorter guys. So yeah, it's definitely factors into decisions. And I think, Lord willing, if I can get to the PGA Tour soon, then I'll start to kind of build my schedule around what golf courses I like and what golf courses are advantageous to me and not. So
you also had mentioned earlier that you recently got married. So what's it been like going out and having to play? I mean, I'm married 5 years now, know my wife for a while, and marriage is its own beast in both good and bad ways. But there's a lot of pressure. I can imagine being out on the road, also having your wife with you, mm-hmm. and having golf's one of those, can be one of those all consuming things where it's easy to spend 10 hours a day or even eight, just focusing only on golf while still balancing a relationship like that, again, on the road with you. So what's that been like adjusting to both getting married and getting married while on the road?
It's been awesome. I mean, I can't give my wife enough credit because she's done such a great job we got married in the middle of the fall season last year, my senior year of college golf, which is extremely busy. I'm trying to graduate, trying to get a degree, and trying to play the best golf I can so that I can have a place to play when I turn pro. And balancing all that with, you know, being a newlywed, she did such a great job supporting me and understanding that I'm going to be gone a lot. And some days I'm going to need to be at the golf course and at class from 8 a.m. to 7 or 8 p.m. And she was totally okay with it. She knows what my dreams are. And over the years, my dreams have kind of become our dreams. And I'm very thankful that she's kind of has a similar vision to me of what the future hopefully looks like. And then, yeah, you know, I will say the first few weeks of pro golf, she didn't travel with me and it wasn't fun. Just because, like you said, I'm at the golf course for 10 to 12 hours and not on my phone a whole lot. So not able to communicate with her a ton and then talk to her right before I go to bed. Hey, how was your day? And it's kind of the same thing for 4 or 5 weeks in a row when I first turned pro. And then, fortunately her company allowed her to start working fully remote. So she's been up here with me and it's been a blast. She's been caddying for me when she can around work and, we've had a lot of fun. She's done a great job of being a caddy and a full-time worker and full-time kind of mental coach for me too. So, she's done a great job. And even though this summer I haven't played well, our marriage has done really well and we've gotten along really well. So I think that says a lot about, what can be, you know, if you find the right one and, you know, your goals are aligned.
Better to have a good marriage than a good career, probably. At least
absolutely.
From what I've seen.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people that have neither or one, and it's not one that they're too happy with. As to your golf game, you said you hit the ball straight. You try to find courses or you enjoy courses that fit that are and also that are tough. What sort of work do you do on the range? Swing videos, you mentioned you work with your dad, but what kind of swing videos are you taking, if you're taking any at all? Like, how much of your time is spent on the range? Like, let's, we're just talking about a normal practice day. How much is spent on the range? What are you doing there? What are you doing short game area? What are you doing on putting, et cetera?
Yeah, loaded question. Yeah, I'd say my range work has changed a lot over the years. I grew up at a golf course that was a lot of fun to play and a good test to play, but the range wasn't the best. We were hitting off mats all the time, so I never spent a ton of time on the range. I was always practicing on the golf course, playing 36 holes a day in the summer in a cart, just playing, hitting shots on the course. And I think that was huge for my development as a junior. Just was always comfortable with hitting shots on the course and never really had any issues taking things from the range to the course. And then in college, you know, still played a lot, but definitely spent more time on the range than I had in junior golf. But I felt like I had a good balance of that. And then, yeah, in pro golf and recently I've been spending, you know, sometimes you're not able to be on the course a ton because, like I said, there's pro-ams and rounds are 6-7 hours. So yeah, you definitely spend, it's tempting to spend a lot of time on the range, but I feel like I've kind of limited myself a little bit to not hitting millions of golf balls because that can kind of get redundant. And then I've had a few issues lately with taking it from the range to the course because I'm not playing as much golf recreationally as I used to. It's almost like every time I play now, it's a tournament. And that's definitely an adjustment. But yeah, swing video wise, I'm pretty picky. My dad, my whole life has always taken pretty good swing videos. So I've always kind of preferred that he do it. And then in college, I probably rubbed some of my teammates the wrong way when I told them that was a bad video or not asking them to take videos anymore. So I had to select a few guys. Jackson Chandler takes a really good swing video, so I had him do it. John Eric, hate to say it, he's not the best swing video taker. But yeah, actually, I've taught my wife how to take a pretty good swing video, and she does really well with it. So, but yeah, I'm pretty picky. I always like the down-the-line view on the hands. Because I feel like that kind of gives me a best reference point of where things are at. But yeah, I'd say, you know, each week I'm taking a few swing videos, just kind of making sure it looks similar week to week. And if I see something that looks a lot different, it allows me to have time on the range to really try and get things dialed in. But I've noticed a lot pro golf when you're on the road every week, like your swing can change a lot without you knowing it. In college golf, it seemed like, you know, you'd play one tournament and you'd have a week or two off. And things would look pretty similar each week. But in pro golf, it's like different every week and you're spending a lot of time. Your body's changing a lot. You know, you're riding 12 hours in the car. You're flying from tournament to tournament. You're doing a lot of different things. So kind of having a baseline of, okay, this is, you know, what my golf swing looks like when it feels good and when it is effective. I think that's huge to kind of have those checkpoints every week.
You mentioned you're playing in Minnesota this week. So after this week, what does the rest of the season look like for you? I know at some point it will be Q school and we'll definitely be rooting you on to get through Q school and play on Corn Ferry next year. But regardless of if that happens, what's your winter going to look like? What's your off season going to look like?
Yeah. So yeah, I've got Minnesota this week, and if I have a good week, I'll qualify for the America's Tour Championship next week in Toronto. So hopefully it'll be there, but if not, that'll kind of start my, I guess, off season a little bit because Q school, I'm exempt to second stage, thankfully, this year. So that doesn't even start till December. So I'll have September, October, November without a guaranteed tournament, which will be interesting because, you know, in college golf, you're used to September and October being busy and playing a lot of golf. So it'll be an adjustment, but I'm kind of looking forward to having some downtime and being able to go home and work with my dad on my swing and try to, you know, get out some of the kinks that have been around this spring and summer when I haven't had a ton of time to work on things. But yeah, I'm definitely going to play some Monday qualifiers this fall. Sending some letters out to hopefully get maybe a sponsor exemption or two would be really cool. But yeah, I may play a mini tour event or a few just to stay tournament sharp going into Q school. But yeah, it'll be nice to have some downtime. And then yeah, Q school, once that starts, it's going to be real busy because if I play well, then Corn Ferry starts right away in January. And yeah, I'm looking forward to a few weeks off, a few months off, and then really getting after it in December.
Which of those, which PGA Tour events are this fall? I think I know there's the Sanderson and then there's the RSM. I'm not sure which of the other ones.
Yeah, so I'm going to play the Sanderson qualifiers for sure, and the RSM as well. I lost in a playoff last year at the Monday qualifier for RSM, so I'll definitely try that one again. I may go to the qualifier in Napa. I played that one last year, almost made it there too. So going to give myself a few chances this winter for sure. I think I'm going to go out to Vegas and play the Shriners qualifier too, because my wife and I's 1 year anniversary is right around that time. So we'll make a trip out of it.
That'd be good. I know you've had some good, I don't want to say good luck, but you've done well in Monday qualifiers before. You qualified for the Barbasol championship last year here in Lexington. Can you talk a little bit about some of the success you've had in Monday qualifiers, why you think that is, and what your thought process is in general on Monday qualifiers?
Yeah, I really enjoy Mondays. It's cool because it's, you know, one good round and then you're in an opportunity where you could change your life. So I think that's a really cool aspect of it. It's last summer, I was exempt through all the pre-qualifiers because I made the cut at the U.S. Open. So that was a really good reason to play a lot of Monday qualifiers, because you don't have to do the pre-Qs. And usually there's only 60 to 80 guys in a Monday qualifier for four spots. And if you have a good day, you're going to find yourself close to the number. So I gave myself a few chances last year. Like you said, made it in the Barbasol. That was my first one of the summer. And then I played the Napa one, missed by two, and then missed in a playoff at RSM. So yeah, like you said, I've done pretty well in those. And it's fun because you just, you know, you're going out and trying to make birdies, and usually you got to shoot at least 5 or 6 under to have a chance at a Monday qualifier. And playing the Americas Tour this summer, I've learned that you got to shoot 5 or 6 under to be in a decent spot each tournament. So it's kind of similar golf of trying to make a lot of birdies. And it's just exciting because, you know, 1 week can change your life. We all know that about golf, especially at the professional level. So it's exciting to play those.
What does it mean to you to go out and try to make birdies? Like, some people talk about it, but for you, what is the tangible change or tangible difference when you say, okay, I'm going to go out here, I'll make birdies today? How does that differ from maybe a normal round or a Thursday round or anything like that?
Yeah, it's something I'm learning as I go. I've always kind of just been a patient, you know, fairways and greens mentality kind of player, but that's what you have to do in college when even par is a good score. Now out here, you got to make a lot of birdies. So I feel like I've found myself hitting driver a lot more, hitting driver on holes that maybe you wouldn't consider it as much when par is a good score, but when you need birdie, you've got to really go and get yourself as close to the green as possible. Find myself going for par fives a lot more, just because your birdie percentage is going to be higher from close to the green than it is from 80 to 150. And yeah, just, you know, the mentality for me that I'm always playing my best is usually let's get looks. How can I get myself inside 30 feet for birdie each hole I tee it up? And then if I have a good day with the putter, then it's going to be a great day. And if not, then I'm going to, you know, shoot around even par. But I think the main thing for me is when I'm getting looks, I'm playing really well. And that method kind of works on tough golf courses and in Monday qualifiers.
Is there any sort of strategy work you do beforehand, as far as you mentioned, in now that you're on the America's Tour, you have more time to go out on the course, you do practice rounds, are you charting the course on a yardage book? What is prep strategically look like for you?
Yeah, I definitely use a yardage book to my advantage. I think especially being at courses that I'm seeing for the first time each of these weeks, it's important to look thoroughly at the yardage book and write down a lot of lines and numbers. And something I've been doing lately is in the practice rounds, kind of picking a specific target off the tee. Maybe it's a tree in the distance or a bunker that I'm hitting it at, and writing those down in the practice round. And then once I get out there in the tournament, I have a clear game plan of what I'm trying to do on the hole, rather than getting there and not really, you know, saying, oh, I hit this in the practice round, but the wind's different today. But kind of having the same finish target no matter what, is it just makes tournament golf a little bit simpler for me. And yeah, I write down a lot of mental notes in practice rounds. Just, you know, some holes are visually more intimidating than others. So I think writing down some notes in practice rounds of, hey, I hit the shot really good in the practice round. This was my target. Like, I can definitely do that on Thursday through Sunday.
When it comes to planning around wind, that's one that Cooper and I like to ask about, because everyone does something a little bit different. When you're planning for the wind for the week, do you go out there? Do you write down the wind directions beforehand? Do you go out there, throw up grass, and check the wind while you're on the course? What do you do to calculate or just track the wind?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really write down the whole week, because I feel like a lot of that changes as the days come. So I kind of usually in the morning when I'm writing, or the night before when I'm charting pin locations, I'll take a look at what the wind's supposed to be, and then I'll write that down. Kind of like if I tee off at 9, I'll write down the wind at 8, 10, noon, and 2. So I just kind of have what the wind's doing throughout my round, and then I kind of play the course in my mind as I chart the pins of, okay, the wind's coming from this direction, so this is going to be my strategy going into this green and things like that. But yeah, the wind is a factor. It's always a factor. I prefer when there's a good bit of wind, because I think it separates the good ball strikers from the guys that, you know, hit it a lot of different directions. But yeah, it's an adjustment for sure. And like this afternoon, I'm going to walk the course again and just kind of look at what the wind's going to be tomorrow and get a game plan for lines off tees with wind and lines into greens. So
I know you've played in a fair amount of major championships for where your career is at. Just talk about each of the U.S. Opens you've played in and what you learned from those experiences.
Played my first one at Brookline in 2022, which was one of the coolest golf courses I've been to. Such a traditional USGA setup, long, long rough, tough greens. It was awesome. I learned a lot that week. I was kind of starstruck by the experience and grandstands everywhere and all the big names. So I played 18 holes Sunday through Wednesday, which was the biggest mistake I've probably made in my career to this point, because by the time Thursday, Friday came around, I was so tired. But yeah, I got to play a practice round with Scottie Scheffler that week. So that day was worth playing 18 holes for sure. But yeah, I learned a lot from playing a practice round with him. He didn't hit a ton of extra tee shots and approach shots, but he spent a lot of time around the greens on every hole. He hit chip shots from every different direction and putts all across the green. So it was cool to see that he really prioritized around the greens a lot more than the other stuff in the practice rounds. And then LA was my second one. I played well there. I made the cut. Didn't play good on the weekend, but got to play four rounds, which was a new learning experience, because that was the first time I'd played a weekend in anything significant. I played twosomes on Saturday and Sunday, which I wasn't really ready for. Pace of play is a lot faster, and you're expected to play in less than 4 hours after playing in 5.5 on Thursday and Friday in threesomes. So it was an adjustment, but I learned a ton that weekend, and then was fortunate to get in as an alternate at Pinehurst this year. Just didn't have my best stuff with me at Pinehurst. I was struggling off the tee, and you can't really do that at Pinehurst, because you're going to find yourself in some bushes and sand and places you don't want to be. So I didn't have a great week, but continued to learn and found out a lot of good things about, you know, how the best players in the world prepare for majors. And yeah, just another experience to add to the belt. It was really cool. And yeah, it's been awesome playing a few US Opens. I hope to play many more.
What kind of stuff have you picked up being in those types of events? Because you're right there. I mean, playing that many rounds in a row is tough for the event, but also by playing that many rounds in a row, you get to see a lot of the best players, which, you know, in some ways playing well at a US Open can catapult your career. In other ways, at that age, at that time, everything comes in stride. And so it's good to be able to get that experience of playing with lots of players. So what have you kind of picked up from watching a lot of them? You mentioned that Scotty worked around the greens. What other kind of stuff have you seen?
I think something I really noticed this year was what guys do on the practice green. Because I feel like over the years, I've had some changing routines on the practice green. I I do a lot of work on start line. So I'll use a mirror or put some tees down and work on my stroke. I noticed a lot of guys this year at Pinehurst were doing a lot of that stuff on like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But when tournament day rolled around, they weren't doing a ton of drills. They were more just hitting putts and getting kind of a feel for, you know, hitting putts of different lengths and different breaking putts. And I think that was something I learned that has helped me out, is being able to be kind of adaptive with my practice routines. Monday through Wednesday can be more structural work, but when Thursday, Friday rolls around, you've got to have good speed control and good feel for different breaks. And usually the greens get a little bit quicker as the week goes. So kind of being able to adjust to that too, I think that was something big I've learned. And then, yeah, guys use a lot of resources on the range. You know, almost everybody's got a TrackMan or a GC Quad. And that's something that I used to not do very much, but as I've been exposed to it, seeing a lot of the best players in the world do it, I think it is valuable, especially on those preparation days of, you know, how far is the ball going at this altitude and temperature. It's all stuff that you got to kind of learn as you go, but it's been cool to be around those guys and develop some habits from them.
When you mentioned what the resources the guys are using on the range, you also mentioned the work on the greens, and in particular, especially when it came to tournament time, what kind of green reading method do you use? Are you solely visual? Do you aim point, tour read, any of those types? What's your deal on there?
I've never been an aim point guy. It just hasn't been something that feels like it would work very well for me with the percentages and feeling it with my feet, but clearly it works well for a lot of guys. But just haven't felt like that one's for me. I haven't looked into the tour read stuff much, but it does seem like it's working for some top players. So I may look into it at some point. But I've always been kind of a feel and visual guy when it comes to green reading. I've always been a creative player, creative putter, especially. I prefer to play on courses that have a lot of slope on the greens, where you're, you know, aiming outside the hole on putts and you gotta dye it in or hit it firm. I like that kind of putting. I always look at where the ball is going to enter the hole, as you know, because each putt, the middle of the hole changes depending on how much the putt breaks, and I kind of read my putt backwards from the middle of the hole. Like, how can I get it to get there from the start? So that's kind of my green reading method. And I would say I'm usually a pretty good green reader. So, but yeah, there's definitely some resources, like you said, tour read, aim point, that some guys use, and it works really well. So just kind of figuring out what works for you and not being afraid to try new things.
And when you're working on the range with what sort of equipment are you using? Are you using TrackMan, quad, both, or are you, and what sort of numbers are you looking at? You mentioned, you know, check and carry, especially when altitude changes, et cetera.
I like both. I like TrackMan and quad. I have hardly ever used both at the same time. But at school, we had a few TrackMans at Ohio State, so I always practice with those pretty often and really worked on carry numbers, especially with wedges. I feel like knowing how far everything goes inside 150 is super important, being able to hit knockdown shots and off speed and all that kind of stuff inside 150 has always been a strength of mine, and I feel like TrackMan has helped me improve upon that. I like the GC Quad too, and my dad teaches with one of those, so whenever he's with me, we're using the quad. I don't own either myself just yet. I think hopefully I can buy a TrackMan in the near future, because I think that one is a little bit more versatile, because it's outdoor watching the golf ball fly, whereas GC Quad's making a calculation. But you see a lot of them out on tour. There's a lot of guys who have different ones, so it's cool to see. But yeah, I think it's important to, for me, I think the biggest thing is looking at carry numbers. Like I said, I'm really paying attention to carry and spin. Making sure my clubs are fit well is a lot of importance with spin, and then carry numbers are something I work on pretty much every day.
You mentioned you were, and we obviously know, you're a good junior golfer. Tell us a little bit about your junior golf career and getting into the game. I imagine a lot of it probably came from your dad being an instructor, but tell us more.
Yeah, so I played my first U.S. Kids event when I was 7 and won my first one, 9 holes with, I think it was a 44. Although I wasn't, you know, a world beater right away, I won a lot of local tournaments, which I think kind of drove my love for the game. I love competing. I love seeing myself succeed and play well and beat other players. And then kind of as I got going, I started playing Golf Week Junior Tour, which is like a Midwest tour that a lot of college coaches came to, and I had some success there. And then my dad and I was 13, I believe, my dad and I rolled the dice and we decided to play an AJGA qualifier. He didn't think I was quite ready for AJGAs yet, but I did. So I convinced him to let me play the qualifier. Made a bogey on the last hole of the qualifier to get the last spot, and then I won the tournament. So I won my first AJGA. I was a junior all-star in Ohio, and that was a big moment for me. I think I really kind of broke through that week and realized that I could compete with the best junior players of my class and the classes around me. And then as I got through high school, I started to get invited to some of the AJGA invitationals, and those are a ton of fun. And I got to play Sage Valley twice, which was probably my favorite tournament I ever played as a junior. And yeah, I had a really good run in 2018, 2019, played really well in junior golf. I got the Rolex Player of the Year award for the AJGA, which I wasn't expecting to get at all. And then kind of played really well that summer. And all of a sudden I had a trophy that Tiger Woods had a couple times when he was playing junior golf. So it was pretty crazy. But yeah, I think honestly, just playing the local tournaments when I was young, and I played a lot of them. I played a 9-hole U.S. Kids event like every weekend when I was 7, 8, 9 years old. And I think that was huge, just kind of getting the feel of playing in a tournament when you're young and getting used to tournament nerves and tournament, you know, toughness and conditions. It helped me a lot at a young age, and I always felt comfortable competing. I've never been really nervous, no matter what the stage has been. It's always been like I've done well in tournaments, I've competed well in tournaments, and I can continue to do that. So I think it all goes back to just playing a lot of them when I was young.
Sounds like your dad had a pretty good grasp on what it meant to be a good player, judging on the fact that he didn't think you were ready yet. You know, you ended up winning the tournament. It's usually the other way around. The parent thinks kid's way better, you know, than what he is. What's your dad's background in that? And just, I mean, I don't know. That's just really interesting to me that he didn't think that you were ready yet. You know, you were that good. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Tiger's dad telling him he needed to keep staying an amateur, even though he won the U.S. amateur.
Yeah. My dad, he had a great competitive career himself. He played college golf at Kent State, and he played a few mini tours, played Q School a few times. He played some U.S. Open sectionals and played, like I said, some mini tours for a few years. So he had been around, you know, high level tournament golf, and he kind of knew what the best players in the world were doing. And I think he did a really good job of building my game, helping me build my game like that growing up, of hitting fairways and greens. And we didn't really chase distance when I was young, and I think that paid off because I've always been able to hit the ball pretty straight. And even as I've gotten longer, still have continued to hit it pretty straight. And I think a lot of that's just credit to my dad and I kind of constructing my golf swing from a young age. And I think his experience really paid off in that way.
That is cool. Well, we know you got some course scouting to do, a little bit more walking for your tournament this week. The last question we ask every guest is the same, which is, if you could go back to yourself as junior golfer and tell yourself just one thing, what would that one thing be?
I would say be patient. I think as a junior golfer, I was so just anxious to get to the next level. And that kind of leaked into my college career. I was, you know, once PGA Tour EU became a thing, that was just a big focus for me is, you know, how can I get to the next level? And in junior golf, it was how can I you know, be ready to win in college right away. And then in college, it's how can I get to the PGA Tour as soon as possible? But I think I would just go back and tell myself to be patient, because the junior golf, you know, now being a pro golfer, I look back at junior golf and college golf, and it's just a lot simpler times. It's a lot less stressful. It's, you know, you're not playing for your living each week. You know, you're playing for fun and love of the game. So I think just being patient at each level would have helped me out a lot, and would have got me ready for what pro golf has challenged me so far. I've haven't played well right away, and I had a lot of expectations coming into this summer, and haven't played great. It's challenged me a lot, but it's been cool. I feel like my faith's a big part of my life, and I feel like that's grown a ton this summer as I haven't played great. It's made me lean on my faith a lot more, and like I said, be patient, because pro golf, you know, I could be on the PGA Tour in a few months, or I could be there in 10 years. You never know. Guys' journeys all look different. So I think just being patient would be the most important thing.
Very cool. Well, where can people find you on social media, follow along with your journey?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and Twitter. Instagram's MaxwellMoldovan22 and Twitter's MoldovanMaxwell. And then my buddy from high school runs a Twitter account called the Maxwell Moldovan Tracker, and he has kept up with it pretty well. So that's probably a good follow if people want to.
Sweet. Well, we'll be sure to follow along. And if you're listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube, please subscribe, leave a rating. And if you're trying to find us on social media, you can find us on Instagram at The Tournament Code and on Twitter at Tournament Code. As always, we appreciate you taking the time to join us. Look forward to diving in deeper to what it takes to play elite tournament golf.